Hello, everybody, and welcome to another comedian's interview for my blog and podcast, A Rich Comic Life. My name is Richard Gill, and my blog describes my experiences of watching over 1,000 comedians and counting over the last 46 years. I'm delighted to welcome my guest today. It's the brilliant character comedian, Mr. Steve Jameson. Yes! Hello, I nearly said Saul Bernstein. That's your character.
That's right. Funny, I didn't know how you were going to introduce it, so I kept dumb, but you did it. It was perfect.
Thank you so much.
Lovely to be here.
Thank you so much, and it's a pleasure to have you. How are you? You all right?
I'm fine. Yeah, lockdowns are over for the moment, and
indeed.
And I'm working.
Brilliant. That's the best news.
It's almost like old times, to be honest with you, sitting in a green room,
yeah,
three, four comics having a cup of tea or whatever we're doing, and just chatting. It's a delight.
It's so good to be back live, isn't it? It really is.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to spend the next 45 minutes to an hour or so talking about your comedy career. Interviews all about you.
And, we could do that in 5 minutes, actually.
And I'd like to kick off, please, by asking you, how did you become a comedian in the first place?
Okay. Well, I'll try and get it. It's a weird one.
Please.
During the 60s and 70s, I was in the music business.
Right.
So kind of there was no fear of going on stage because I'd done that. I'd been a singer, a songwriter, musician, producer. So I'd done that. As I had a conversation, funny, in a green room a couple of weeks ago, funny enough, and somebody said, why music business? And I said, I didn't. What do you mean? I went, it left me.
Wow.
And that's what happened. Punk. I always think of, and a bunch of other singers in the same boat, as being a full of water. And somebody just pulled the plug out. We all disappeared. Punk had started, so nobody, we weren't, you know, I was already in my late 20s. And as I say, there was a whole bunch of people who just kind of disappeared overnight. So consequently, I spent 15 years as what I call a civilian, being out of show business. My third marriage broke up.
Right.
And
I'm sorry.
I was absolutely devastated. I just thought, what a loser. You know, I've got three marriages behind me. And I was having dinner with some friends one night, and I was going through a pretty bad stage. And there was a woman there, was an actress, and she said, you know, you're really funny. And I said, no, and I said, my dad was funny. I said, my dad was the comedian. My dad was a really funny man, great joke teller. And she said, no, you know, you should do something. And I just, really? She said, yeah, and I was thinking about it. And she said, I said, well, how would I go about it? And she said, well, if you get Time Out magazine, which at the time Malcolm Hay was the man there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they show that they have workshops, like comedy workshops.
Right.
And I thought, okay. And I cut quite a long story short. It was coming up to Christmas, and I was very. This sounds terrible. It gets better. I was just really down, and I phoned my cousin who lived in Brighton, and I said to him, "Listen, how about I come down the day after Boxing Day just for a couple of days?" I said, I'm just really down, and I just need to be cheered up. And he said, yeah, come over. He says, come over about 10 o'clock and on day after Boxing Day. Anyway, it was one of those situations where I just slept really badly, left home at 6, got to Brighton at 8 o'clock or 7:45 or something, knocked on his door. He went mental, absolutely, for waking him up so early. We ended up walking along the seafront in Brighton. It was a beautiful, very cold, but beautiful sunny day. And I was in such a state, I was crying. And he
said, oh, mate.
What is it? And I said, I'm just so down. I don't know what to do. He said, well, you know, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I've got a choice. I'm going to do one of two things. I'm either going to become a stand-up comedian or I'm going to top myself. I'm going to commit suicide. And he put his hands on my shoulders and he looked in my eyes and he went, top yourself.
Well, thank God you're here.
Well, sadly, he was like the brother I never had. He was my first cousin, and he died a couple of years ago.
Oh man!
And I wasn't sure what I don't like. You won't believe this. I hate public speaking.
Right.
I mean, an act is one thing, but this is different. And I said to my wife, I said, you know what, should I tell that story? It's at a funeral. She said, no. She said, you know, people, everyone there who knows you, who would know how close you were and the sort of relationship you had with him. And I told that, and it cheered everybody up.
That is
a real sad thing.
That is so brilliant.
And basically, I kept my eye on time out, and there was a workshop came up in the February, I think, with a guy called Tony Allen.
One of the original
alternative comedians.
Yeah.
And in fact, I apart from him kind of giving me good pointers, he turned me on to Lenny Bruce.
Right.
And by listening to Lenny Bruce had a routine called The Genie.
Yes, yeah.
And in it was a character called Soul. And that is why Soul became... Where Bernstein came from, I don't know. It came into my head and it seemed right. Although, funny, if you see the movie The Sunshine Boys...
Yes, know it
there's
well,
There's a
yeah.
scene in it where Walter Matthau says to George Burns, Soul so-and-so died. Somebody said, no, it's right. George Burns says, no, it was Soul Bernstein.
Wow.
So I don't know, but I will tell you something. I did a gig in Tunbridge Wells about 4 or 5 years ago, and an elderly couple came backstage. The man said, there's a couple would like to see you. And the woman said, we've been following your career for nearly 50 years.
Wow.
So I don't know who they thought I was.
What I'm getting from listening to this, what sort of year was this then when you first did your first ever gig as the character? Because we're going to come on to the character in a minute.
Well, I did 10 years as me.
Right.
I did the workshop in February, March, 1993.
Right.
That was like 6-8 weeks or something. Did my very first gig on May the 11th. 1993, down at the King's Head in Crouch End.
I know it well, yeah.
And I created Soul some years later.
Right.
Funnily enough, at the King's Head, within an improv group with that Mark Mayer ran.
Well.
And I know you think, so, well, why would you create a character within an improv troupe? But it kind of worked. We all created something.
Wow.
And Soul basically was just a man. There was no backstory till a few years later.
Yeah.
I might as well answer that question as
no,
well.
No. Let's move on to him, because I think it's one of the current great characters in stand-up comedy.
Oh,
I would put you up there with Alan Partridge and Al Murray, the pub landlord.
Oh my God!
Whenever your name is on the bill, I know I'm going to have a great time. Whenever Soul's name's on the bill, because for people who don't know who he is, describe who he is and his background for us.
Okay, Soul is an 88-year-old old Jewish man who was born in the Ukraine,
right.
Ended up in his early teens in America. Came from, I say, a showbiz family. They were street performers. Soul went to America, ended up playing in the Catskill Mountains, what they call the Borden Belt, where every Jewish comedian in America had a training ground. It was kind of a Jewish Butlins holiday camp kind of thing. Did Vegas, did New York, just Miami, did all those places, and kind of made a comeback. So Soul's story was kind of an all-round entertainer.
Yeah.
He would sing, he would dance, he would, because in those years you had to do everything. He would tell jokes, he would sing, he would dance, magic tricks, ventriloquist act. Everything a performer could do, you had to do. That was in your ammunition. Soul is kind of, I almost say, it's a tribute act to some of those old guys that were in, like the Sunshine Boys, that were in vaudeville in American music hall over here. It's a trip. I mean, bear in mind, I'm in my 70s.
Wow.
So the kind of people that I look up to and influence me would be the same people that Barry Cryer loved. The young guys around today wouldn't even know some. I mean, no. There are young comics who see me now, and this is fresh for them. They've never seen this before. Material's all modern, but it's written in a way where people say, oh, they're old jokes. They're not old jokes, but they're written in a very old-fashioned way.
That's exactly the point I was going to make. I interviewed Barry Cryer on here on the blog, and it was literally, what was it like working with Morecambe and Wise? What was it like working with Les Dawson? What was it like working with the Two Runners? And these great comedians of the 70s.
Let me interrupt you. He worked with Bob Hope.
Oh, he worked with everybody.
He worked with all the American, because my influence is the American comics.
Rather than
the English.
Although,
having said that, the reason I wear a Trilby hat is a tribute to an old Northern comic called Jimmy James.
I
loved as a kid.
My home city is Carlisle, and I know Jimmy James really well. I'm broadcasting this from London, but my home city is Carlisle, and Jimmy James growing up.
Was it? He wasn't from Carlisle. He was from Leeds, wasn't he?
He was from Leeds, but he was a Northern comic who was popular. My dad used to love him.
Absolutely, and that you can still see on YouTube.
Yeah.
The sketch with the elephant in the box with the
fantastic. And when you mention about when you describe Sol, that's the impression I get, because you were saying about the great American Jewish comedians. My favorite American comedy playwright is Neil Simon. Those old films, The Sunshine Boys, The Odd Couple was it's just a classic play. I used to work in the civil service, and I was in an amateur dramatic society, and we put The Odd Couple on, and they asked me what was my favorite script, and I said this, and I played Oscar. And there were so many great lines. He had about 1,000 lines, but the jokes were just so well done. And it's resembling, it comes across in your act. I
didn't know that. I'm really flattered that you couldn't say anything nicer.
Well, my friend, when I saw the act, I thought, this guy is hilarious. This character is so good. I particularly love the opening line when you walk on and you go, ladies and gentlemen, I'm an old Jew. They gave me 5 minutes to perform. It took me 2.5 minutes to walk on, and it'll take me 2.5 minutes to walk on. That's genius.
you almost got it right there. But
tell it how it is, if you want to tell it, please.
I would walk on and say, God bless you, ladies and gentlemen. God, thanks for coming. Listen, they said I could do 20 minutes. It took me 10 minutes to get on. It'll take me 10 minutes to get off. So that's the show. You got good night.
I was almost, well, yes, that's the point of it. It's such a great character. So you did 10... did you say you did 10 years as yourself before he came along?
Yeah.
What was that experience like as yourself? Was that just a learning experience?
As it turned out, it was a learning experience. Yeah. And it was a very tough learning experience, because there are lines that I do as Sol, which were written as me.
Right.
And I'm kind of jealous of Sol. I never got the laughs that he gets. And I say he because he is separate. He is separate to me.
Yeah.
I can honestly stand up and say he's a funny man. And I don't think I was that funny.
You are hilarious, mate, because you created him. I always think, whenever I think of character comedians, I always think of Ronnie Barker, because as himself, he came across very shy in interviews. He always had to have something, even if it was a mustache or even the glasses, as a front, and then he was fine. But of course, these characters he created were extraordinary. They really were. Oh, they were completely different.
I know. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful. That's what I see with Sol. I mean, you're absolutely transformed when you walk out onto the stage, and you just get I've never seen you give a bad gig. You just walk out and you just
you've missed them. You've not been there.
Well, I was going to come on to this. To date, what has been your best and worst gig? Because I can't imagine you ever having one.
Yeah. Oh, to be honest with you, best gig, there's been loads which have just been so enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure I could pinpoint one in particular. That sounds, and I don't mean that to sound snotty.
No.
It's just that I don't know. I suppose like working in Liverpool, there's just something. One, and I'm there this weekend.
Right.
there's just something about Liverpool where Sol can be as rude as he wants and get away with it. Because I have to tell you, when Sol started, there was no plan for him to be a dirty comic. I wanted to be, like when I see Dominic, I worked with Dominic Holland recently.
Yeah,
I
said, superb.
I said, you know what I said? And he said, oh, Sol's really rude. I went, you won't believe this, but when I started doing Sol, I was watching you and I thought, it's really good, a clean act, you can do television, you know, you can do everything. And Sol can't do all that. I'm a nightclub comedian and I'm really delighted, I'm happy with that.
That's brilliant.
You know, I know people are saying it's getting tougher now. You know, Roy Chubby Brown's getting banned and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Could that happen to Sol? It may be. I don't know. Obviously, I hope not because there's still some life in me. And,
sure.
And it's great fun. But I often think the audience are looking at Sol when I've said again, it's that the old grandfather. Oh, talking about, you know, he doesn't mean. He didn't mean that, you know.
Yeah.
It was, you know. No, I did mean that. And it's, you know, I kind of get away. Well, of course, I get away with stuff because I'm hiding behind a character, and that makes it easier to go out and perform every night.
Sure. Yeah. Of course. But if you look at some of the 70s traditional comedians, the first act I ever saw was on a family holiday in the 70s, and it was Les Dawson. And I love Les Dawson. I absolutely love him. And I can see shades of him in the character that you do, because
oh, really?
He's very droll and very dry, and he gives the impression he doesn't want to be there, but he's determined to make the audience laugh, and that's all you can do.
He had a great command of language.
Oh, he was wonderful. He was so wonderful, Les Dawson. He had so many irons in the fire that he could use. He had the piano, he had the characters, he had the wordplay, and he was brilliant live. He was so good live.
Yeah, sadly, I never saw him live.
But it was funny. So, Sol, sorry, I've called you Sol again. It's Steve.
That's okay.
please tell me, how do you remember all your jokes and routines?
I've no idea, because I've got the worst memory in the world. And as I'm getting older, it's getting harder. But having said that, apparently, and I'm not certainly not making fun of people with Alzheimer's.
No.
But apparently, if you're aware of forgetting things, you haven't got Alzheimer's. I hope that's true.
Yeah,
I read that somewhere. But I tell you what I do. You'll notice if you go into a green room, a lot of comics write their act out, what they're going to do that night, on a piece of paper, a little pad or something. I actually write it on my left. I'm right-handed, so I write it on my left hand, but I hold the microphone with the left hand, so I can't even see it if I wanted to.
That's brilliant.
but I know it's there.
So do you? You don't make it up as you go along, do you? Or
no. I'm heavily scripted.
Right.
I will come out of the material if something happens in the room.
Sure.
Particularly if I can just take a moment and come up with something funny, because the thing is, I noticed a lot of comics they'll kind of fire back really quickly, and you think, if you'd have waited a second, you'd have said something funny.
Exactly.
Instead, you actually answered. You dealt with something.
Yeah.
There was some years ago, early days for Sol, when Russell Peters came over, and it was just before he hit it really big. I got a phone call. We had the same agent, and the agent called me. He said, Saturday night, Russell's doing two shows at the Shaw Theatre in King's Cross. he's looking, he needs a support act. He'd be keen for you to do it. Can you do it? And I went, he says, I know you're not working. And I'd been away. I'd been in the West Country all week. And I was looking forward to a Saturday off. And I went, well, I said, where is it? He said, it's in King's Cross. And I thought, God, I live in Camden. I get the tube down.
Next door.
Did the show. And this will sound racist, and it's not meant to, because of the audience that he had, I was the only white person in the building.
Right.
And I got heckled at one point by this guy, and I can't remember. I was obviously talking about soul sex life, and I can't remember, but I just, the audience, he said something, the guy, I can't even remember what he said, but I just paused. I just waited for a moment, and I just came to the edge of stage, and I went, like, you'd know the fucking difference between a man and a woman. And it the house down. Wasn't the funniest thing in the world to say, but because I'd taken my time, I don't know if I'd have just come straight back, I wouldn't have said that. I don't know what
But
it just got a massive laugh, and it made the joke on him. Suddenly, he's the idiot now.
Exactly,
The old bloke talking about sex on stage.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, so that was kind of one little instance, but I'm pretty focused when I'm on the stage, but I'm not unflappable. I, you know, some people, you think, oh God, there's nothing you can. Al Murray, you mentioned Al before.
Yeah, yeah.
Al, I think, is unflappable. I don't think anybody could do anything in the audience.
I mean, he's one of the best with an audience. He's away with them. It's just extraordinary to see. You mentioned that Soul was created. Am I right? You said downstairs at the King's Head in Crouch End.
Yeah, I was part of an improv group,
right,
run by Mark Mayer.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were trying to create some characters, because you have this thing where you're putting it out to the audience, you know, and they say, right, you're an old Arab guy with one leg and you work in the shoe shop or something. And funnily enough, the very first character that I created was an Arab. Because when I was in the packaging business, we dealt with a lot of menswear shops in the West End of London. And in Jermyn Street and Bond Street, a lot of Arabs and Kurds, a lot of Syrians and Lebanese had clothing shops. And I kind of picked up the way they spoke.
Yeah,
and that was the original thing. And then I think I saw Saturday Night Live. I saw Billy Crystal doing The Weatherman.
Oh, superb. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And obviously I was influenced by Mel Brooks.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the character was just a man. Like one of the in the improv troupe, one of the things that we did was a kind of blind date. So we'd have someone like, well, she's around now, Meryl O'Rourke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Great and very funny. She'd be the Cilla Black character. You'd have three guys sitting on the stage, and you'd pick a woman out from the audience. She'd have her back to the stage. We did a private do. The first time I did it in public, we played a bar mitzvah in a hotel near Heathrow Airport, somewhere on the A4, one of those big hotels. So the woman, we came out, and the woman had her back to us, and then she had to ask us questions. And I was the one she picked. But I remember one question, she said to me, can you play tennis? I went, tennis? I can barely walk. And so but I tell you what, I did a new material night.
Right.
And I was really uncomfortable with it. It worked.
Right.
It worked right from the off. And I just felt, I remember saying to some friends, you know what, I'm going to create a lot of anti-Semitism. Because it was just something I just didn't feel comfortable with.
Right.
And then I didn't do anything with Soul for a couple of years. And there was an American comic over here called Stephen Alan Green.
Right.
And
I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's back in America now, but he lived here for a couple of years.
Right.
And I went out, I'd had lunch. I went out for lunch with him in Covent Garden to Joe Allen's, real that showbiz haunt. And what happened was, the day before, a friend of mine phoned me up and he said, listen, I'm going to do Tuesday nights. It was at the Hampstead Comedy Club. He said, I'm going to do Tuesday nights. I need to run in. I want to do a one-man show and I want to run in material. So he said, what I want to do, I want a nucleus of acts who can come. I want to do six Tuesdays or something like that. and Harry Hill had signed up. He was going to do it. Dominic Holland was going to do it. And he said, I want you to come and do Soul. He said, I really think there's something there. And I said, well, you know, coming every 2 weeks, 5 minutes, new material. I've never been that prolific. Go and have lunch with Steve and Alan Green. And during the lunch, I went to the toilet. I came back and he had a DVD player or camera or something. And he said to me, I'll never forget this. And he said, so what's it like being back in show business after all these years? I went, well, it's a thrill and a privilege and a delight and blah, blah, blah. And I sat on the tube going home and I probably said it out loud. I know who Sol Bernstein is.
Wow.
And then I thought he's an old vaudeville guy. He's making a comeback. He's trying to come to terms with the modern world and, you know, talk about banging my chick and stuff, you know, the kind of lunacy.
That is wonderful. And you can clearly see the influence with Mel Brooks and Saturday Night Live and all this sort of thing. I love all that sort of thing. I saw Gene Wilder in a play in the West End, the Neil Simon play, and I absolutely love Gene Wilder, and you can see a lot of him in that. It's such a wonderful character. And when you said about being formed downstairs, the King's Head and Harry Hill, I first saw Harry Hill 30 years ago at Downstairs in the King's Head.
Right.
And he brushed past me. It's the greatest opening line ever, apart from your one. I think they're both the same. I think they're both the same. He brushed past me. He stood up on stage. He said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm really sorry I'm late. I had to have a testicle brought down. And everybody burst out laughing. And then he said, from Derby.
I hate the word genius. I kind of think he's
extraordinary,
incredible talent.
Yeah,
there's I've got a lovely Harry story for you.
Please do.
During before I'd created Soul, a lot of the comics were saying to me, you know, you're in the music business, you should write a one man show about your experience in the music business. And I started writing it, and I was for a number of years. I ran the Meccano Club in Islington.
Right, yeah, I know it, yeah.
When I took it over, it was already established, but the lady who ran it was ill and couldn't run it anymore, so I took it over. And we were doing it there one night, and I was running that stuff in. My dearest friend Mike Gunn was writing his show about being a drug addict. So I think Mike went on first, I went on second, and Harry was running in new material. So it was billed as three people running in, you know, new stuff. By the time Harry went on, his opening line was, who's had the most interesting life, eh? Who's had the most interesting life? Drug addict, music business? Who's that?
That is wonderful.
And there was another night where I was comparing my own club and just dying. Harry was on first.
Oh, brilliant.
And I got him, he just nodded to me saying, like, get me on. And I brought him on and he said, Steve James. And he said, what, warming you up to the point of violence, right?
When I chatted to Al Murray, I told him that story. And he said, is this the one about when... Harry Hill walked on with a mouse trap on his nose and he said, ladies and gentlemen, I don't like cheese. He's so, so good. Anyway.
Oh, no. What a great guy. Great comic guy.
let's move on. You won the Spirit of the Fringe Award at the Edinburgh Festival in 2005 and have never looked back.
I have done. No.
It's such a great act. Please describe the experience and what's your view of comedy competitions in general?
Okay. First of all, I knew nothing about Spirit of the Fringe. I think it was 2003. It was my first year.
Yeah, I do apologize.
No. The thing was, it was a real shock because I'd been on the show. They'd come round and, you know, and seen everybody's shows and got in touch with me and said, would you come and do 5 minutes on the show, on the Mervyn Stutter show?
Yeah.
And then the last thing, I think I did did it. I certainly did it once, maybe did it twice. And then they invited me. They said, would you come and do the last one? And I went, yeah, I'd love to, because I knew what had happened was when I'd performed there, more people came to see my show because they, it was a nice little advert, you know, to promote my show, which is basically why they did it.
Yeah.
And when I got there, and then somebody was given an award, and I just thought, and I had no idea. And then they said, and so we present you with the Spirit of the Fringe Award. And it was absolutely lovely. I mean, this thing does nothing for your career, but it was my first and only kind of honor. And I was absolutely delighted. So that was it. When it comes to competitions, we had a funny experience a couple of years ago. Sadly, you probably know that Lynn Ruth Miller sadly passed away.
That was really tragic, yeah.
Very recently. Well, yeah. We both did the oldest comedian.
Yeah, the old comedian of the year, the Leicester Square Theatre.
Yeah. And we both got, I say obviously, not obviously, but we both got into the final, and we were on the final. Arthur Smith was hosting the show. Brilliant. And with great respect to everybody else that was on the show, we were the oldest people. We were the oldest on the show. You know, even if I'm not 88, I'm not so old, I'm still in my 70s, and yeah, she was too. We didn't come in the top three.
Oh, mate.
And I tell you what, my closing line, because I looked at my watch, or they gave me a light, and I realised my time was up. And I went, well, I'm going to go and bang Lynn Ruth Miller in the dressing room. I'm going to go and fist her or something. And got massive round of applause, came off stage, and bless her, she came. We had to come off the stage, and instead of going back into the green room, we had to sit in the stalls.
Oh, no.
And as I came off the stage, she came towards me. She gave me a hug. She said to me, you just won the competition. And
absolutely.
I did. And I remember when they did three, two, and I thought, as long as it's her, I'd be happy with that. But it wasn't. It was a young guy. And I thought, what the fuck is going on? And it really,
So
consequently, I'll never do a competition again. I just kind of, it sounds like sour grapes. I know it does. And I don't, I kind of don't mean it to, but I do mean it.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
It would be like if Barry Cryer had gone in for it and not been placed. You think, hang on a second.
Yeah.
A guy of 35 won it. You know, that's, they're not old comedians.
Yeah. Very, very true. Your character is exceptionally confident on stage. Do you suffer from any nerves before you go on stage at all? And how do you cope with them?
Oh, nervous as hell.
Wow.
One of the things that I need to do, I pace up and down.
Right.
I pace up and down, kind of tap the groan. I grunt a bit. Go out and do it. Before we connected today, I'd gone out for a walk this morning, and I thought, well, I've got the night off tonight. I thought, God, why do I do this? Why do I put myself through it? Wouldn't it be nice to retire? But having said that, about 3 months ago, during the lockdown, obviously no gigs were being booked, and I'm an older age anyway. And I said to my wife, I said, you know, I may have already retired and I don't even know it. Because when I was saying you don't leave show business, it leaves
you.
It's just in. And she said to me, I went, what I was end, you know, to do it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I, for example, on Facebook this week, I had a private gig to do Saturday, October. I know this will be weird because now time, we might then go 2022 or something. But I had a private gig, which they've moved to December now, because apparently the venue they were doing it in, they're reflooring the place. So I've still got the gig. They've paid a deposit. So everything's still on. But I put on Facebook that I'm now available on that Saturday, like in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, yeah.
And within half an hour, never, ever booked me. came up with and I just went, I don't want to be rude, I said, but do something a little bit closer to home, traveling, blah 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 blah. And then just before I got a message, Bearcat in Twickenham, and they said, are you still free on the week? And I said, yeah. And they went, you're with us, which is great, because it will take me 40 minutes to get there. And I'm doing because of the lockdowns and everything, I'm doing a bit more traveling.
Sure.
I tried to cut the traveling down a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of when needs must, you know, you need to work. So you work maybe for a little less money than you would have worked for 18 months ago. Certainly taken advantage, well, not taking advantage, but if they've got less people coming in, they're taking less at the door, so they're paying a bit less. So,
of course, yeah.
So you've got to live with that. So the Bearcat, absolutely, when I sat down with you, I thought, God, how confident I'm feeling, because my next gig at the Bearcat is booked, is already for January.
There you go. Yeah, of course.
But yes, I do get nervous. I kind of think if you don't get nervous, you don't care anymore. I think so. I don't know.
No, I totally agree. Let's move on to Edinburgh. I'm very, very fortunate to be able to go to the Edinburgh Fringe every year. I obviously haven't been this year. I didn't go last year because of the pandemic, but I've been going every year since 2005. Right. And I go in the middle week normally, and I see about 50 shows, and I'm exhausted by the end of it. That's my holiday. Can you tell me what your first Edinburgh Fringe was like? What year did you go up? What was your experience of it?
Right, I think it was 2003.
Right.
And that was the year I got the Spirit of the Fringe Award.
Sure.
I did it at the Gilded Balloon. It wasn't the billiard room. I think it was the room next door, and I can't remember, what it was called, but...
There's loads, isn't there?
Absolutely loved it. Well, I must tell you, I come from a family of market traders, so they were workers, they were grafters. And for me, working 27, 28 nights on the trot, particularly without having to drive and travel and park and whatever, just to walk from where I'm staying to the venue. But actually, funnily enough, the first year I did it, I shared accommodation with Mike Gunn, Rainer Hirsch, Paul Provenza was over from America.
Yeah.
Me. And there was someone else. Maybe it was Steve Best.
Oh, he's brilliant.
And I think it was a really big flat. And I know that Ian Stone stayed a couple of nights. And I think somebody else stayed a couple of nights, but there was a load of us. And one of the things that I remember, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed it. Mike Gunn hated it. He hated every day up there. But I loved working. I loved the experience. And it was also really nice. I've got a thing. I probably sound very snotty. I think if any comics go up there with a modicum of talent and a modicum of funny, they come back better.
Yeah.
If they go up shit, they come back shit.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that, but I did. And I've noticed a lot, and I certainly, it was certainly kind of the breakthrough for me. I came back just feeling a lot, lot stronger.
Yeah. I think that's the magic of it. Watching it from an audience point of view, it's an extraordinary showcase for anybody who wants to go up. And I think it's there for the exposure of the comedian.
Yeah. Now things have changed. I mean, if you ask me the question, would I go again? I'd probably say no.
Right.
As much as I did enjoy it, I lost quite a bit of money last time I went up there, actually. Which was, I don't know, about 5-6 years ago or something. Yeah. I tell you what, I've kind of realized my place in the pecking. I'm a nightclub comic.
Yeah.
And I really, that's, for me, that's not derogatory. I love that.
Yeah.
So that's where I am. I'm not a performance artist.
Yeah.
For me, if you say to me, Steve, I want to book you, 20, 25 minutes, great. I'm not looking for 45-minute extended sets particularly.
No.
I want to go out there and slam them, go out and do what Soul does. Well, I think he does best is go out and just smashes them over the head for 20, 25 minutes, and then comes off and goes
exactly
home.
Exactly, my friend.
Whereas you know, there's a lot of performers, you know, Al Murray, if you'd want, you desperately want more after 20 minutes with Al.
Yeah.
Al's an hour performer.
Yeah. Very true. I've seen you many times on stage over the years, from We Love Comedy in 2014, that little tiny comedy showcase, to headline comedy. We Love Comedy was in Liverpool Street, just a little tiny club.
Sean Brightman's gig.
Okay. That's when I first saw you. I got to know Sean really well. He compared it. And I've seen you many times at Headliners. I live in Southfields, and my friend lives in Hanwell, and we meet in Chiswick every once in a while and go to the George the Fourth. And it's a wonderful club to play, certainly for you, because that room is extraordinary. And you have made, as I said at the start, you've made me laugh so much that whenever your name's on a bill, I always look forward to.
Oh, bless you. Well, next time I'm on the bill and you come, for God's sake, say hello.
I will do, mate, definitely.
Let me buy you a drink.
Thank you so much. Please, can you describe your writing process, if you've got one, and where do you get your ideas from for the shows? Can you tell me a bit more about this?
I tell you what, I'm very lazy.
This is the general answer from the comedians.
It's a conversation I shy away from. Especially if people say, "Oh, you know, come to the new material night," and I went, "I haven't got any new material." I tell you what, I'm a massive fan of Woody Allen.
Oh yeah.
I'm a great believer. I've read so much of his stuff, and there was a wonderful interview he did. It's in a book called Comedy Greats. They did an audio version as well. I can't think for the life of me the name of the guy who wrote it. But the guy had been a comedian.
I'm sure I had that book, but I can't remember the name myself. It's a big white book with Robin Williams on the front, and Woody Allen was in there.
I can't remember. No, I'm not sure. Was it Gene? Anyway,
the name of the.
Woody Allen said was, when you're trying out a new bit of material, don't do it when the club's half empty. Do it in a packed room. It needs some balls to do it. But do it in a room that's packed when you've won the audience over. And you know that if you throw a line in and they don't laugh, you know you can get back into another bit of material which you know works.
Exactly.
So consequently, I've kind of taken that on board. So, and I don't write chunks of 5, 6, 7 minutes of material. So if I'm going to go down to the King's Head on a Thursday night, which I know I could go down any night, Peter and I have been friends for 25, 26, 27 years.
Yeah.
I could just phone him up and say, can I come down tonight? I'd be doing some old material and then maybe drop 3 new lines in or something like that. So consequently, I'm better off just putting those lines in during my set.
Sure.
So there's that. I really won't try anything unless I'm pretty certain it's going to work. I'm not one of those, well, let's take a chance. It might work, it might not. I've got to convince myself that it'll work. Like there was I don't want to do it, but it was a bit of material that I used to do as me.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder if that would work as Soul. And it does. It works better for a Soul than it did for me. And it worked for me. So it's the weirdest thing, but I knew I was confident because I knew the phrasing, I knew the timing,
delivery
of that piece. All I had to do was in Soul's voice with that accent rather than in my voice.
But
I'm terrible. When you're thinking someone's going out, like, God, I worked with Michael McIntyre in the early days. He would go out and he'd do 20 new minutes.
I saw him in a hut in Edinburgh before he was famous, played to about 50 people. And you could just tell he was going to be a superstar because the delivery of the jokes and it was just extraordinary.
Yeah.
So, Steve, do you have any ambitions as a comedian?
Not really, because I'm not that ambitious. But having said that, it would be nice to keep doing this till I'm 100.
Well, George Burns did, and Ken Dodd nearly did.
George Burns actually, no, he didn't make it to 100.
I didn't make it to 100.
No, he nearly, he was 99, I think.
Ah, it's a shame.
Yeah. And Milton Berle as well. Also,
till
his late 90s.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, the one thing I would love, and if somebody was listening, the one thing that I'd really, really love to do would be to get onto something like The Simpsons and do a voice.
How fantastic would that be?
Especially now Jackie Mason's passed away.
Yeah, that was that was awful. Yeah.
That would be fun. Something I've never done and something I've kind of wanted to do.
I can see you on it.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't see me, but you'd see someone.
No, I could hear you on it.
I know.
That would be amazing. That would be incredible. How have you found online gigs as opposed to live gigs? Have you done many of them during lockdown?
No, I tell you what, I've done one.
Right.
And it was a gig that was booked to play a synagogue gig that Bennett Aaron, the comedian, had booked. And it was cancelled because of the lockdown. In fact, it was the first weekend last year, the very first lockdown, I did my last gig March the 13th. 2020, and this gig was on the Sunday night, and Boris made the announcement on the Monday to, you know, for the lockdown, but they, you know, these people knew that they wouldn't get an audience, so was cancelled. So Bennett said they want to do it in November or December of the year of 2020.
Sure.
And he said the only thing is, he said they really need you to clean it up. Clean the act up a bit.
It's the best bit, the smuts.
Anyway, we reached a compromise. And I said, how long have I got to do? He said, 15 minutes. I said, okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll edit like mad, and I'll do 10 clean minutes from my act. And I don't know if you know, and I was going to plug it at the end of this anyway, but during the lockdown on Facebook and Twitter, I put an old joke on every day.
I would always like it.
I did it right. And during that period, I was contacted by a company called Redbush Music. They asked me to put an album together.
Wow.
So I've got an album out called Sol Bernstein, An Old Jew Telling Old Jewish Jokes.
How fantastic.
And I said, what I'll do, 10 minutes of my act and maybe 5 minutes of the cleanest of the Jewish jokes from the album.
That's brilliant.
Which gave me a chance to plug the album and also tell the jokes. So consequently, that's what I did. And then somebody else called me and said, you did this podcast, this thing with Zoom thing with Bennett. And I went, but I didn't do my act. I did a clean thing. And I don't really want to do that.
No. You need the whole act, really,
need a live audience.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like doing kind of men's night. You actually asked a question earlier on, we didn't finish it, about worst gigs.
Yeah.
And I'd done a men's night in a golf club in Shirley near Birmingham.
Right.
And I did the men's night there, and it was great. It was lovely. And it was, but you know, when I came out, I thought, you know, I don't want to do men's nights. I need women in the audience because of my abusive nature. About 2 years went by, and the guy phoned me. He said, I don't know if you remember, you did this show for me. And I said, yeah. And he said, I'd like you to come back to celebrate it's a birthday. I can't remember if it was 30 years or something like that. And I said, look, I said, is it a men's thing? He said, no, it'll be couples. I said, look, I noticed most of the men were older, so I'm guessing their wives are going to be older too. He went, no, they'll love you. You'll kill. We agree the fee, and we book the thing. On the day of the show, I just happened to go on online banking for something. He was going to pay me on the night, but I looked to check about something else, but he'd actually paid me. Oh, he paid me the day before. And I thought, well, it was very nice. He didn't need to do it. Anyway, I get to the gig. And one of the things, like when young comics say to me, who actually believe that I am Sol Bernstein, and I'm 58 years old, I've been doing this job for 70 years. I say, any advice you'd give? And I went, you know what? I couldn't give you any advice other than never prejudge a room.
Yeah.
Now, I'm having a hell of a lot of fun now with you. I didn't know you were in the audience. You've ever been in the audience in my show. So I'm benefiting now.
From that's that. Lovely.
Because
that's
if you wouldn't really have nice seen, you may not have me on this thing. You know. And when I send you the invoice, you better pay quickly because I send the boys around. Anyway, cut a long story short, I look at this room and I said to him, you know what? I'm not sure. And he said, what do you mean? I went, I'm the last person to prejudge a room. And he said to me, look, there are two tables of Jewish people over there. They're going to love it. Everything will be fine. Okay. I said, look, if you want, I'll give you a last chance. I'll take 30 quid for petrol and I'll go home and I'll send you the money back tonight. I said, no hard feelings. He said, no, don't be silly. Now, I didn't go on with an attitude, but I went on and it was tough. But I was supposed to do 25 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'd heard the word disgusting used from one of the, I've got really great hearing. My wife's partially deaf, but I've got really good hearing. And there was one particular point where from that corner where the two tables of Jewish people were, so there must have been 10 on the table, there must have been 20 people. Yeah. And the rest of the audience, maybe 300 people, weren't Jewish. And I heard the word disgusting. And I thought, okay, blanket. I didn't do it. And I glanced very casually at my watch while I took a sip of my drink while I was getting a laugh. I thought, oh my God, I've done over 20 minutes.
Yeah, thought, yeah, yeah.
You know what? I'm gonna do the jerking off routine. And I started to do it, and I was getting really good laughs, even from people on one of the Jewish tables were cracking up. They really were. And then out the corner of my eye, I saw some movement. And there were round tables, and there was a guy from that part of the room weaving his way around the tables. And I thought, he can't be going to the toilet. I thought, no, he's coming to me. And he did. And he came straight over. He walked, and the audience were kind of, and I kind of was watching them, watching him. And I was carrying on talking. Then I stopped, and he came around, he put his arm on my shoulder. He said, we'd like you to leave.
Wow.
And I had the mic in my hand. I went, who's we? And everybody laughed. I said, take your goddamn hand off me, you son of a bitch. Right. And he kept it on. And then I saw John, the general manager of the golf club, come running across. And he came and I put the mic down so the audience couldn't hear me. I said, listen, he wants me to leave. I said, this is madness. I said, if you're not unhappy, if you're unhappy with the whole thing, you leave. And I was being really exactly. Nice. I wasn't swearing. I wasn't.
No.
And then I kind of looked up and I said to John, hang on a second. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, I said, for some reason, I said, this gentleman has turned out to be, and it was in Sol's voice. This guy is your moral guardian. And he's unhappy with my performance. I said, I'd like to carry on, but I'll be honest with you, I think he's poisoned the night, which I believed he had. Yeah. But I couldn't just carry on now.
No, exactly.
Is he going to stand there? He's going to walk away? I mean, is he going to try and punch me? He was an old guy, so I don't know. It would have been really funny, you know, to try and have a mock fight with him, you know, to go, I don't know what I would have done. And I said, you know, ladies and gentlemen, all I can say, he's poisoned. I said, you know, whatever I've done, you've been laughing, so I'm guessing you've enjoyed it, but it's got to the point where I can't continue. So all I can say is mazel tov, happy birthday. And I lifted my drink, I had a glass of water. I always take water on. Here's to another 30 years, whatever. Thank you. Good night. I gave him the microphone.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It gets funnier because the green room was a back bar.
Yeah.
And just as I was walking round, just before I got into that back room, I heard a woman say, how come a Jewish man would talk like that? And it must have been his wife and somebody else from his party. And I just looked in, I tipped my hat, and it was great because it was getting dark out, the lights were on, and I could see their reflection in the windows. And they ran for their fucking lives. They just shit themselves when they, like, I caught them. You know what I mean? Like, how can John? Next thing is John and a big guy comes in. Like, I look like a bouncer. And I just for a second just stood back and he said, "It's my brother." He said, "Don't worry." He said, "Stevie, so I'm really sorry." He said, I said, "John, I said, I'll tell you what." I said, "You should have kicked him out."
Yeah.
You know, and then we were chatting about it. And suddenly this very, a lady came in, very ladylike, very English, like, you know, twin sets, pearl necklace, whatever. And she came in. And she said, "Mr." And I thought, if she's going to give me any grief, and she came over, she said, "Mr. Bernstein, I am so sorry." And she said, "John, the man wasn't even a member; he was a guest. You should have kicked him out." She said, "Mr. Bernstein," she looked like she thinks I'm real. Obviously, she said, "Would you like to go back on?" And I said, "I'd love to, but I don't think I can." I said, "I think that the night's been poisoned." You know, what's going to happen if I go back? He's going to be walking out and making a noise going across. You know, it'll disrupt the show.
That is unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I came out of there. There's a follow-up story. Now, I don't know if you heard of, an Orthodox Jewish comedian called Ashley Blaker.
Yes, I've heard of him.
Right. Ashley was organizing a tour. He was doing it himself.
Yeah,
he was talking to a synagogue in the Birmingham area.
Yeah,
he tied up the fee, tied up the date, and he was just about to finish the meeting, and the rabbi or the guy from the synagogue said, "Just before you go, Ashley," he said, "Did you ever play a golf club in Shirley in South and South?" And he actually knew the story. He went, "No," he said, "That was my friend Sol Bernstein."
What a great story.
Because the guy was going to say, if it was you, you're cancelled. I don't want, you know, I heard he was disgusting. And he went, "He's not disgusting. He's a funny," he said, he's a funny man.
Great act.
"But if it's not your taste, it's not your taste."
Exactly.
You know.
What a great story, though. That's wonderful. With the online gigs, I went to a lot of them.
Did you?
And it was just like this, but at the start of them, there was no audio. You couldn't hear the laughter or you couldn't hear the audience at all. And because I've got a loud laugh, because I was laughing loudly, I thought I was going to get taken away because I was just laughing at four walls. Yeah. But then they opened them up, and the comedians who were the guests could chat to the front row, the virtual front row, etc., etc., etc. And I used to go to Happy Monday's gig on a Monday night, and I'd go to Always Be Comedy. I'm a big fan of Always Be Comedy in Kennington. I always sit on the front row there. And on the Fridays, I used to go to the Irishman abroad, Return of the Crack with Charlotte Regan, who's a very good friend of mine.
Really
good lad. As soon as the comedy clubs started opening up again, you cannot beat live. There is something special about being in the moment, because you never know what's going to happen. And it's just wonderful we are now slowly getting back to live gigs, and it's just a wonderful thing to go. It really is. Who are your favourite comedians, past and present?
God, I tell you what, it changes. It changes so often because things crop up. For example, I genuinely forget Billy Crystal, but he was so on good. The one show. He's got a movie just about to come out. This comes out. The film will be old, but he was promoting it. He was from America. They did it on the Zoom thing. Billy Crystal. I have to say Jackie Mason.
Yeah.
Lenny Bruce. Chris Rock. I just think it's absolutely wonderful. Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Was great. There's Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
There's so many. I'm guessing kind of mostly Jewish or black. black Americans.
Yeah. I would say for me, I mean, I've seen over 1,000, but the American comedians, I love Steve Martin. I think he's fantastic. I saw him live.
Have you seen the show with Martin Short?
Martin Short. I've seen it on video, and I had a ticket to go to the Royal Albert Hall, but they cancelled it.
That's right.
Which was a shame. But I did see him do the gig with the Steep Canyon Rangers, the bluegrass, and the music. And right at the end, he came on with the arrow in the head and the Egyptian routine. It's just wonderful. I love him. I've seen Bill Hicks. I was very fortunate to see Bill Hicks at Manchester. Amazing. He was amazing. I'm a massive Cheers fan. I've met Norm, who I love.
Are you a Rich Hall fan?
Oh, massive. He's a regular at Headliners. He's such a great act.
I'll tell you what, you want to talk about one of the highlights of my career? Headliners did this, you know, they were doing some showcase shows.
Yeah.
So I did one last year, and then we did one this year.
Right.
And on this year one, there was six acts doing 10 minutes each, and Rich was closing.
Wow.
And everybody had left. All the other five acts had gone home. I stayed. And I was just sitting with Rich's wife watching him.
Wow.
I adore him, and he's
so wonderful.
And his work ethic is, you know, when I say I'm lazy about writing, he writes all the time.
It's amazing.
It was a lovely moment. He was tuning his guitar up, and he said, "You know, ladies and gentlemen, that's Saul Bernstein." He said, "88, that bullshit. That ain't guy's 26. Wears a lot of fucking makeup, right?" Yeah, to be mentioned, that was just
fantastic.
A really big round of applause. And his wife, Karen, said to me, "He loves you, you know." And I went, "I know." I said,
that was such a compliment
to mention me.
Oh, brilliant.
Who does that?
Yeah, exactly. I love the fact, I love his character, Otis Lee Crenshaw. I love his stand up, but particularly with the band as well. The way he can just pick a member of the audience and then create a song, it's an extraordinary talent. It really is.
I know it is.
I've been a massive fan of his for years.
Me too, for the first time he came over.
Yeah. Following on from that, like me, do you go to a lot of stand-up comedy shows as a member of the audience?
Never. But having said that, I'm going to see Rich Hall in about 2 weeks' time in my local theatre.
Brilliant. Well, that's great. Just as an aside to that, if you're performing on a bill, do you stay and watch all the comedians on the bill?
It depends. If I'm in London, probably.
Yeah.
Or obviously, it depends where I am on the bill. If, for example, I was in Southampton last night closing.
Sure.
I got there at the beginning, so I could see all the show.
Brilliant.
And again, it depends. If it's out of London, if it's like a 2-3 hour journey, I probably won't stay.
No.
Although the only time I ever did was to watch Alan Carr.
I'm going back
a long time from his early days when he was doing stand, but no, he hadn't done any television. But I was doing a gig just outside Manchester, and my agent was lived in Manchester, and he said, "Right, I booked you on this show, and you're on with a guy called Alan Carr." He said, "You're on before him." He said, "But I know you're going to drive home after the show." He said, "But I'd really like you to stick around and watch him." And I did. And then I drove like 3.5 hours home. But
fantastic. A great comedian live. He's so good.
Wonderful. Yeah.
He is one of the few that uses Carlisle, the theatre in Carlisle, as a testing ground for his new tours. And I've seen him once or twice in Carlisle. And whenever he walks on, he's so good because he does obviously know the area. But the first line is normally, "Oh, I have no idea where I am, but it's lovely to be here," you know, and then he'll have a great line about that particular audience. And that's a great skill. the reason I asked the questions, those two questions, is that in my blog, I've got a section called The Ones That Got Away, and I've written about 25 of them. And top of the tree for me was Morecambe and Wise. I would have loved to have seen them live because they were just extraordinary. There was this other level with those great comedians where just twiddle your glasses, or the Fairs with Tommy Cooper. We did see Tommy Cooper live, and yeah, he was extraordinary.
I saw Tommy Cooper twice.
Yeah, yeah, he was amazing. When we saw the curtains open, there was nothing on stage but a bed, and he's lying on it. And the one woman in the crowd starts laughing, and it trickles round to everybody's laughing. And he pops up after about 5 minutes, and he goes, what, has somebody come on? He was genius.
When I saw him, he did that thing from backstage. He said, it's dark in here. And he's fumbling around. They've introduced him, but he knows where he is, but yeah, he's making out, he's finding
just
his way.
He was just superb. He's one of the greatest. I've so much enjoyed talking to you. You've been a fantastic guest.
Bless you. You've been a fantastic host.
Thank you so much. Just before we go, is there anything else you'd like to say? Where can people find you on social media? Can people see where you're gigging? Have you got any books coming out or anything like this, or podcasts or anything?
No, I tell you what, you can find me. By the time this goes out, I hope I'm still alive.
You will be, my friend.
All things being equal, you can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter. When things really settle down, my website will be actually Sean Brightman.
Yeah,
built my website.
Wow!
Wow! I didn't know his venue. We love comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always keep it up to date. But because now things get canceled, you know, you're worried about lockdowns and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I just put stuff down, basically on a daily basis on Twitter and Facebook about where I'm working.
And is it Sol Bernstein? That's the tag, is it?
Yep.
Okay.
Sol Bernstein, and obviously the website is www.solbernstein.com and .co.uk. And the other thing is, there might be another album out by the time it comes out, but the album, An Old Jew Telling Old Jewish Jokes, which you can get on Amazon and you can buy on iTunes.
I'm going to get it.
I'd send you a copy, but it's not that. It's only an online thing.
No worries. What I'm going to do, I'll get it. I'll buy it, and when we next meet, you can sign it.
Well, there'll be nothing to sign.
Oh, it's only online. Oh, yeah. Mate. Yeah. Okay. Well, I will get it downloaded onto my phone then, definitely.
And if you enjoy Sol's act, I mean, there's some swearing on it, but there's some just wonderful jokes. I really researched.
Brilliant.
And you've got about like 40 odd minutes, just 40 to 45 minutes of joke.
Brilliant. That's wonderful. Well, I'm hoping to see you again live very, very soon.
And I can't
wait, because as I say, whenever your name's on a bill, I always smile, and I know I'm going to have a great time. So I wish you every success with the act. Keep doing it. You're doing a joyous thing. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you, my friend.
Absolutely. You too. Bless you. Keep well. And please, I owe you a drink.
Thank you so much.
I owe you two drinks.
Thank you. Thanks for your time. I'll definitely take you up on that. And all the best. Thank you so much.
You too. Take care.